There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
This is a unique responsibility which the framers of our Constitution knew that the Senate, and only the Senate, could handle. Our founders trusted the Senate to rise above short-term passions and factionalism. They trusted the Senate to soberly consider what has actually been proven and which outcome best serves the nation.
All right, and there is Mitch McConnell talking about the unique responsibility that the Senate has in the process of impeachment and removal here in this republic. As we get started, Midday Mobile, live local talk of the next couple of hours. And yeah, we're going to watch Washington and the Senate getting into the process here where they're going to vote on rules today, talk about that. Also, you know, Dalton and I talked about this morning. It's going to be very interesting. Just some of the rules laid out here. That the senators cannot speak. They have been told. Here, let me read this to you. This is, it says here that the senators, under pain of imprisonment. So it starts off with this proclamation in the Senate. Each day will begin with the archaic proclamation. All persons are commanded to keep silence on pain of imprisonment. In other words, the senators don't get to talk during the proceedings, because they are the jurors, right? They're the jurors in the impeachment hearings, overseen by Chief Justice John Roberts, who, in fact, not only do the senators have to be quiet, they also are facing a cell phone ban. Chief Justice John Roberts has said a cell phone ban is in effect on the Senate floor, and it will be enforced. So think about this. So the senators not only don't get to comment, and I guess not talk to each other, not say anything, not ask any questions. They can do that in a written form, but not, and they can't speak them. And in addition, they can't even sit and tweet and do whatever else they would do on their smartphone during the event. So they will have to sit and listen. Imagine that. Senators will have to listen for what could be 12-hour days in that august body of the Senate. That gets started back today, just actually in a few minutes, and we will hopefully get you some audio of the opening. Lord knows, we're not going to bring you all the audio for the next couple weeks on this, but when there's things you need to hear, like the opening ceremonies, like it's the Olympics or something like that, when we will get some of that audio for you today, and then if something happens that you need to hear over the next couple weeks here, we'll bring it to you here at FM Talk 106.5. Also, a lot to do in local news and state news, and that's why we're lucky. Our buddy Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News is going to join us here in just a little bit. Remember this last weekend, you had the AL1 Republican primary debate over in Baldwin County at the Daphne Civic Center. That was moderated by Jeff Poore. We played some of that audio yesterday, but I'll talk about that with Todd coming up in just a little bit. And by the way, if you did not catch it when it originally aired on Saturday here at FM Talk 106.5, or you didn't hear it yesterday on the replay, the podcast of that available by going to our website, fmtalk1065.com. In addition to that, there's a ton of other things to listen to as well, since we do over 40 hours a week of live local programming, and we put that up in podcast form. Now, go to the website. You can sort through it kind of a la carte style. Just go find the hour or the name of the show and then what you want to check out there. You can do that. You can also subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, any of those places, and get those podcasts delivered to your smartphone. And it'll tell you, hey, this is what it is. you listen to it right there. So we'd love you to subscribe at iTunes or Stitcher. iTunes, obviously, for iPhone folks. Stitcher, if you're on an Android phone, or a Deezer or Spotify or TuneIn Radio or podcast, all those places, you can get them there and check them out. So you can go back and listen to that debate. But I'll talk about that coming up with Todd Stacey. And what happens early next month in Montgomery? Will they get back to work, right, as session gets cranked up on Goat Hill? So he and I will talk about that as well. And as always, your text at 343-0106, 343-0106, our phone line and text line, same number, 343-0106, which, by the way, too, somebody was saying it's still cold on the text line. You darn right. Let me edit myself. You darn right it is. I went out to the truck earlier, and I said, oh, well, it just feels cold. And I got the thermometer in the truck, not the station. One in the truck said 39, like 45 minutes ago. 39 degrees is where we are at the FM Talk 106.5 studios. The forecast says we're supposed to get to 44. Right now, 39. Bright sunshine and 39. Heading for that high around 44. I like it. Listen, it'll be 90 degrees soon, and these days will be distant memories, so soak up the cold or whatever you should do when it's cold. Enjoy it. All right, coming right back. Todd Stacey joins us. It's Midday Mobile. It's FM Talk 106.5, and we're glad you're here.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
So y'all, bear with me 1 second. It's 12:16, FM Talk 106.5. Dalton, I probably shouldn't do this without my glasses. You know, I always say, and the people that say things. I was about to say, we learned this in Scouts, but I can tell you I didn't learn any of this in Scouts. So the right tool for the job. If you're getting a splinter, a big briar splinter out of your hand, isn't a rusty X-Acto knife blade there it is. Isn't that exactly what you're supposed to be using? I don't know. I asked my buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, joining us. It's the most of the rust is off the blade. It's back. I mean, it's not right where the cutting edge is. And it's and I'm using it to slice open my hand to take out a big splinter from a briar right while we do the show.
That just gives me the willies, Sean.
What could go wrong? What could possibly go wrong with an X-Acto knife balanced in one hand and my other? It's probably going to be fine.
Well, I hope your insurance is re-upped for the new year.
I think we did. I think we got everybody signed up here at the station, so we're good. All right, so a lot to talk about here, man. I appreciate you joining us. And, we lean on you for your Montgomery experience a lot, but also for your Washington experience and your time spent up there. And today is one of those days that not a lot of people that were staffers or have worked in Washington can say, oh, yeah, I remember, that last time.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, there aren't many staffers that were also around in 1999. Now, I will say in the Senate, you probably have more because you do have some career people that get in young and they stay for an entire career. So hopefully there's plenty of that. But, when it comes to impeachment, there are some, I think there are a handful of lawmakers that were around for 1999. But really, it doesn't matter that much because the playbook, the rule book, throw it all out. This is a political exercise. It's a partisan exercise. I don't think anybody expects the rhetoric and the accusations and all this kind of stuff to change any. It's funny to hear senators kind of harken back to the Clinton thing, to the Clinton impeachment as a way to kind of gain face. Like, oh, well, this is the way we did it during the Clinton thing. Because both sides are using that argument, and it's really splitting hairs. But at the end of the day, I don't think anybody expects anything different than a political exercise, a partisan exercise. And the thing is, we probably know the outcome, right? Something crazy would have to happen for the president to actually get convicted.
Yeah, so you and I both I've been saying it, I've talked about it for months. The result is going to be that the president will not, President Trump will not be removed from office. So what we're going through is are the motions, literally going through the motions now. But the motions in the august body of the Senate are something. I mean, it goes on for a long time. They got to be quiet for 12 hours a day. There's no smartphones. We've got the Chief Justice. I mean, we have the presiding the person presiding over the court being Justice John Roberts. I mean, this is a big deal for a known outcome.
It's a very big deal. And I think, you know, you've heard some senators, including Senator Shelby, express a little bit of frustration because as much as this is a, you know, constitutional process and absolutely, you know, fundamental to the balance of power under the Constitution, there's a lot of folks that think the House really rushed it, didn't do a complete job, and therefore is now leaving the Senate to sort of finish the job. And that's not their role. Their job is not to investigate or to charge. Their job is simply to hold a trial. And so, but because it was a, you know, a pretty quick process in the House, a lot of a lot of gaps remain. And the way to go about that is to do a more complete job on the front end. But I think, I mean, just trying to be objective as I can to observe this, it wasn't, you know, methodical. It wasn't deliberate. They wanted to impeach the president. They had a commitment from day one that they were going to do that. And so now, you know, here are the results. And I don't think anybody expects anything other than an acquittal. Now, that may take some time, right? They're going to, like you said, go through the motion. The process can be complicated. Right now, they're deliberating over this resolution. That'll probably take all day. So, you know, the prospect of having this thing wrapped up by State of the Union, maybe good if they get tired of it, if they just kind of get worn out and some of these people that are running for president want to skip town and go to Iowa and New Hampshire.
Okay, this is good because I hear all these different numbers. First thing I've heard that is 12 hours a day, and then I heard three or four weeks. We talked to Quinn Hillier this morning. He thinks Mitch McConnell is going to have it wrapped up sooner, or at least he wants to have it wrapped up in a week's time. I mean, what's realistic? How much can be said? Because you just pointed out that the heavy lift, the investigation, all that stuff should have been done in the House. This is the testimony. This is the trial.
Right, and I think it comes down to kind of some kabuki theater because, as we've discussed, the Democrats know the score. They know the end result. And so what they need to do is get as much political gain out of this as possible, make as much political hay. But you've also got some Republicans who want to be seen in from purple states. They want to be seen as magnanimous, as deliberate, and not just as partisan. So they want to, you know, allow more witnesses or things like that. You're hearing things about Mitt Romney and Susan Collins and all. But I think at the end of the day, it comes down to how much will Democrats demand? Will they overreach, knowing that they're never going to get everything they want? And will they demand enough, so much, that Republicans, it makes it easy for Republicans to say, all right, look, we wanted to give you some more here. We wanted to throw you a bone, but you asked for way too much. We can't just relitigate this thing. So, you know, allowing people like Collins and Romney and some of those to actually vote with McConnell to speed it up. I can see that happening, right? Just to say, hey, we threw you a bone. You wouldn't even meet us halfway. You demanded the world. Now we're going to go get this done.
Yeah. What you're getting at here, and in this kabuki theater, what gains will be made will be obviously Democrats getting, you know, whatever benefit they think they can get against the president in the presidential cycle. Also, individual Democrats getting material for campaigning, you know, on here's me saying this, here's me saying that. But the same thing's true for Republicans, right? I mean, they're going to get those in somewhere like Alabama would love to have him. We'll get around to Senator Jones in a second, but would love to have, here I am standing up and defending the president, you know, or whatever they're going to say. At the same time, on the Democrat side, it's this idea that, you know, we did everything we could. We did everything we could for you. So press here and donate now.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Absolutely. And you're right. Same on both sides. A lot of Republicans, this is the reddest of the meat that they could throw out to say, hey, look, I stood up for the president. I mean, you saw that during the House process. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw that with Bradley Byrne. He was all over the place with that message. And I'm sure it was beneficial to him politically. Same goes for Democrats. the Democratic base right now demands impeachment. And you're right. I think they get it. They know that there's not much of a hope that they would get a conviction and removal from office, but they at least demand that you did everything possible. And so, yeah, you'll see a lot of that. But you're right in thinking about, okay, at what point does it just become ridiculously long? At what point does it start to become fatigue?
I'm there.
Start showing out. What matters is, and I'm sure people are watching these numbers really closely, what matters is states like Michigan, and Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. This is an election year. We're voting for president in November. And those are the kind of states. Arizona is another one. Those are the states where the election is going to be decided. So if polling in those states starts showing that voters are just tired of it and that they're ready to move on, I think that's the point at which, you know, Chuck Schumer and some of the others will say, all right, let's just go ahead and do this. I do get the sense that Schumer understands, at least for now, that dragging this out beyond State of the Union sort of takes away a big victory for Trump. Trump would love to come in the House chamber for State of the Union having just beaten back impeachment. Mm-hmm. That would be a tremendous achievement for him. And so they want to deny that. Can they drag it out that long? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a funny thing because, without being, somebody can find an exception, but we talk about this analog of this being like a court where you had the House serving as the grand jury, the Senate serving as the jury, you know, the judge is John Roberts, and prosecution and defense, but this is not done to only find, I mean, what you just laid out had nothing to do with to find justice or not. It had to do with dragging it out for this extraneous benefit or this other benefit. Like this one thing, the Kabuki Theater is going on, but the benefits are things that happen outside that chamber or the negatives.
Oh yeah, and look, the political consequences may not even be known yet. I mean, go back to the 90s, go back to the Bill Clinton impeachment. You know, Republicans pressed ahead with that, even though some political advisors at the time said, you know, this is a little too far. You know, you've investigated, you've done all this, but actually impeaching maybe a step too far. I remember the Slow Burn podcast got into that a little bit, and they were right. I mean, it turns out they had no hope to actually remove him from office, and impeachment only emboldened Clinton. It may have weakened his presidency a little bit, but it certainly didn't hurt the Democrats.
But Clinton was in his second term, right, at that point?
Right. Yeah, he didn't have another election to go. I'm just saying it damaged the Republican brand a little bit going forward, and, you know, in congressional elections and things like that.
Now, one of the conversation pieces that came up this morning with Quinn Hilliard mentioned he thinks that McConnell may give multiple ways to vote on different parts of policy here, or different parts of the rules. So senators that are in tough districts, Republicans, can have their cake and eat it too. They can vote yes one time, they can reframe it, let them vote no. So they can refer to, oh yeah, I voted no on that, or I voted yes.
the old John Kerry. Look, yeah. And that's smart of McConnell. He's got to work with this caucus. I mean, as easy as it is for people in Alabama to be like, well, of course you would vote no on this. You know, if you're representing Colorado or Arizona or some of these other purple states, you need to show some independence from the president. And so McConnell would be very smart to allow something like that. Again, I'm not your best person on Senate rules and process. I don't know who is. The resolution itself we put up today, and it's pretty convoluted.
Yeah.
But I think politically, McConnell would be wise to kind of offer them some off-ramps, if you will.
What do you think about, on the flip side, as you look at a Manchin or our Senator Doug Jones, do you think he'd like to have the option to vote yes and no?
Well, he may get that. You know, he may be able to split the baby a little bit. And what I've, you know, been talking with Jones's office about is, you know, what does it look like politically for y'all? What does it look like for him politically? And we're going to talk more about that as the process goes forward. But what's interesting about Senator Jones is that he's kind of in a position where he's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't.
Yep.
As much as conservatives in Alabama would be upset with him convicting the president, if he voted not to convict, his base of liberal Democrats would be furious. And not just that, but the nationwide, that would damage the Republicans, the Democrats' case. If Jones voted against impeachment and against removing Trump from office, man, he would really be doing damage to the national Democratic narrative of unity in that regard. Same thing for Manchin, but Jones happens to be facing re-election this year. But I'll say one more thing about Jones. Given that scenario, given the fact that you're going to make a bunch of people mad and a bunch of people happy no matter what, I think it sort of gives him the freedom to do what he wants.
Right.
That's what he said. He's like, I'm going to call it like I see it and do it the way I want. And, so if that's what you say, then we just follow what you do and trust that that's what you believed. But that gives you no insight to how we might actually vote.
Coming right back. More with John Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. And we'll talk a bit about some races going on here in Alabama. And, of course, what comes up next month. No, it's not continuation of impeachment. It's regular session for the Alabama legislature. How about that?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Which, by the way, those of you that keep keeping up with this, the dual splinter extraction with the rusty X-Acto knife blade was successful. And I'm still here. A minimal amount of blood on the Maracas Systems 36-pot control board in front of me. Minimal amount of blood on the X-Acto knife, so it can be put back in the back so people can use it on their next project, cutting something up back there. I wiped it off. It'll be fine. All right, continue our conversation with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, and he will send y'all an email if you sign up.
I will. I'm just glad we know exactly who Patient Zero is. in some kind of outbreak. But you're right. Now is a great time to be signed up for the newsletter that goes out every morning. And we've got elections coming up in 42 days. We've got the session coming up in 14 days. So right now is a great time to be signed up. It's just aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Go to subscribe, put your name and your email in, and you'll be on the list. It's free, no cost at all. But I welcome you to subscribe to the Daily News, and I appreciate your input.
Yeah, and I want to remind folks, too, if you're wonky like me, you can even go beyond that and get a real in-depth dive into behind the scenes of Alabama politics.
Oh, yeah, we certainly have the premium subscription, right? And that's, I call it sort of the AP history class, it's a little bit advanced in terms of our nerdiness about Alabama politics, but some people get into that. And so, like this past week, we reported on the Senate race and some polling on the House race there in Mobile and the 2nd District closer to Montgomery. So a lot of insider talk that you won't see day-to-day on the Daily News, but it's our premium subscription service. So certainly welcome all political junkies to sign up for that.
Absolutely. And you point out in today's email, they're just 6 weeks until primary.
Yeah, it's 42 days. 6 weeks to me kind of sounds like back when we were in school, that was a long time, because that was your right. Report card. But it's not long at all. It's a month and 11 days, and that's not counting today. That's when we're voting on the Senate primary, these congressional primaries, the Supreme Court, and, of course, the presidential primaries. So it's coming right up. We are now in the thick of campaign season.
And you write about this, too, about going negative, and that with 6 weeks left, this is where it's going to go negative.
Well, yeah, and you're starting to see that. You're starting to see some knives come out, and that's I'm not criticizing anybody. I've worked campaigns so long, it's just part of the process. And what happens is, around this time in campaigns, you'll do some polling, the last in-depth poll of your campaign, and you'll see, okay, where do we stand amongst the other candidates? Do we need to catch up? Do we risk not making the runoff and things like that? And you'll also do a lot of message testing, not just message on how good I am as a candidate, the positives about me, but also potential attacks against your opponents. So they, most campaigns have that by now, and you're starting to see some of these messages come out. This week, you know, Tuberville, Coach Tuberville is kind of ratcheting up his rhetoric, attacking Jeff Sessions. I think it was only a matter of time there before Tuberville went after Sessions, knowing that he is now in third place. Second place, solidly in second place. He saw his first place position in that race really just erode with the emergence of Sessions running again. So he's got no choice. He's got to punch up. And so he's coming after him. They're familiar attacks, right? It's about, hey, why did you recuse yourself? You let President Trump down. These are familiar attacks to us, but you can tell that they've gotten some numbers back that show he needs to do something to stop Sessions from getting in that, from avoiding a runoff completely.
Does Sessions then punch down, or does he just stay mum?
That's an interesting question. I don't really see Sessions spending any money to go after anybody unless you get to a point where, let's just say that Sessions is sitting at 46 to 48% support in a head-to-head race, and that Byrne is at 33. Well, okay, maybe if I knock Byrne down a peg, I can get over the hump. But that's the only real scenario I see. What I'm really looking forward to seeing is what Tuberville and Bradley Byrne do. Bradley Byrne, as we've talked about a little bit, he has really ramped up his aggressiveness in this new year. I mean, here it is, the 21st. They're already in high gear. Other campaigns are kind of working to catch up. And I think you'll probably see a bit of a surge in his support just because he got out front. He's campaigning really hard to build his name ID in North Alabama. So I'm eager to see how Tuberville and Byrne sort of duke it out and see, will Byrne go after Tuberville? Will Byrne go after Sessions? I don't know. They all have their polling back by now, and it shows you different things. And now you have to make the choice, okay, do we spend some of our campaign money attacking another candidate, or do we just build our own, positives up? Those are tough choices, but that's why these campaign consultants get paid.
Okay, but if you're in the situation where you're Sessions and you say, "Man, you know what? I'm not gonna punch down. I'm not gonna do anything," but other people do it for you, right? So we've talked about Club for Growth being. And help me with this. I mean, Club for Growth has backed Jeff Sessions, but is specifically against Bradley Byrne. Is that right?
That's right. And look, they've already released an ad in that race. They've already, and it was actually just in the Mobile market.
Yep.
They went after Bradley Byrne, to knock him down a peg. It was kind of weird because they based it off some economic votes and things like that. But they at least showed a willingness to do that. So in the scenario I just described earlier, Sessions wouldn't have to touch any of his money and keep his name clean. Because, every time your own campaign sponsors an ad, you've got to say, "I am Jeff Sessions and I approve this message." That includes a nasty attack ad. So it's nobody really wants to do that. If you can get an outside group to do it for you, that's nice. Of course, they can't coordinate. That's the law.
Yeah.
But it's sometimes they can seem rather well suited to each other.
Right. And what's the benchmark for Club for Growth? Why do they pick people versus other candidates? I mean, how do they decide on somebody? Because, I mean, let's look. Honest to goodness, I've gone round and round with this. With AL1, I'm sure it's true in AL2, and let's go to the Senate race. There's not a big bunch of policy difference between all these folks running for office.
No, and that's why it's kind of hard to figure out sometimes. They interview candidates. Like, I'm sure most, if not all, candidates for Congress and Senate went to D.C. to and spent part of their time interviewing with Club for Growth and some other groups like U.S. Chamber of Commerce and maybe some others. But they're one of the so it could be personality if they get a good feeling about a certain candidate. More than anything, though, I think they want to win. They want to have supported the winner and sort of help build that relationship in Congress where they have folks, helping push their agenda, which oftentimes is, kind of against the spending bills and, against some of these policies. They were big against the Ex-Im Bank, as Sessions was as well. They kind of go back and forth because a group like Club for Growth is very careful not to oppose Trump because he's so popular. but some of their previous policies would certainly be in contrast to the Trump agenda. But that, you know, but things like appropriations, things like agriculture, you know, farm bill stuff, that's what they've traditionally opposed. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's perfectly legitimate, but it makes for some tough votes when it comes to things like the farm bill representing an agriculture-heavy district, or appropriations when you're talking about getting money for the port and all that. You know, yeah, it's easy to say you oppose all that, but when your constituents expect certain projects, it makes it tough.
I want to swing it back here to what's going to happen or not happen in Alabama. But while we're talking about voting here in the primary and then the general, you said you've written here today, two pre-filed bills are sponsored by Representative Thomas Jackson, Democrat out of Thomasville, that would allow early voting up to 14 days before an election and would abolish the need to apply for absentee voting. Talk us through this.
Yeah, and he's sponsored these before, and I don't really see them having any more success unless he can maybe get some Republican co-sponsors to some bipartisan work on this. Early voting has been talked about in Alabama for a long time. It's really existed in our neighboring states for a lot longer. I worked a race in Tennessee once, I guess it was 2006, where they were just implementing early voting. And it changes a lot. I mean, when you've got, I think there it was, 2 weeks, 10 days, something like that. It just moves up the schedule for elections. And in some ways, it's fantastic because you can get your vote out of the way. That stops them from ringing your phone off the hook and things like that. On the other hand, you know, whose decision is made? What stories can break? What scandals can break in the last 10 days of a campaign? So there's some positives and negatives to it. I thought John Merrill, Secretary of State Merrill, made some good counter arguments saying, look, we're already setting records for voter registration. Our turnout rate is way above the national average. We're doing well with our voting, but let's not change anything. Plus, it does add a significant cost on the state and local, you know, for filling those personnel spots.
Now, one last question here. Where do we stand going into session on, do you think we're going to get a special for prisons? I know we've said yes and then no. Are we still at no, or what do you think?
Honestly, Sean, I don't expect a special session unless something dramatically changes. What I do expect is a very big focus from the governor at the beginning of the session. It'll probably be the top part of her State of the State message. About why we need to do what she's recommending on prisons. Of course, we don't know what those recommendations are yet. The commission still hasn't said these are the plans. There's not a bill that's been drafted. So we'll know more about that. So because of all that, I don't think there's going to be a special session. I think it'll just be individual bills. Instead of one big gas tax bill, it'll be individual bills that track maybe some in the House, maybe some in the Senate, but not some special session, you know, where they get it all done at once. Of course, that could change. Next week, we might say the opposite. But right now, I don't expect there to be a special session.
Do you think the executive branch angle is still in there, where maybe for infrastructure, Governor Ivey contracts with a private entity to build out a prison, then we lease it from them? Is that?
Yeah, that's, I mean, they're full speed ahead in that. They're now in the RFP process. You know, they've got bids out. Actually, one company withdrew from the bid. I guess it was just last week. So, look, this is not an easy task. There are many complicating factors. But, yes, the executive branch, the governor and the Department of Corrections are trying to take that away. It is trying to pass a $900 billion prison plan would add a pretty complicated factor to trying to get some of these reforms done. So they're saying, okay, we can just do that on the contract side. We can just do that executively, but y'all have to pass statutory reforms to show the federal government that, hey, we're actually trying to fix the prison system. You know, Department of Justice, the courts here in Montgomery. That's what they're trying to show. Just enough progress.
Okay, wait a second. So the politically unpopular thing the governor will take on as long as the legislative branch will do the things to check off on Judge Thompson's work order here.
Yeah, and to be sure, I don't think any of it's politically popular. I was hoping to do some polling on this, you know, in the next couple of weeks. We've talked about this before. It's like, do you want a lottery to support the prison system?
Yes. Helping prisons.
Well, yeah, you and I do. You and I would be great with that, but it's just not one of those things that people, you know, it's not education, it's not fun, and you got to remember, a couple of years ago, I guess it was during 2015, they came within just a couple of hours of passing a big $1 billion prison plan that meant construction and all that stuff, but they got just up to the point of passing it, things broke down, and so I think that's one thing that has made the governor and all of them reluctant to try to use the legislative process again, because it comes with a lot of different variables, it comes with different interests wanting to attach things to it and get some money out of it. And so if they can just do it executively through the Department of Corrections, hey, let's build some prisons on one hand, and then legislature, we need to change the system, you know, statutorily in other ways. That would be your sort of combined two-pronged plan. Will they get it done? I don't know. I mean, it's a big lift. Maybe working in their favor is the fact that there's not a whole lot of people, voters at least, paying attention at this moment.
There you go. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. One more time, tell them how to get your email in their inbox.
It's really easy, and it's free. Just go to aldailynews.com. Click subscribe at the top of the page, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. We'd be glad to have you as a subscriber.
As always, a pleasure and a wealth of information. Thank you, man.
All right, Sean, be good.
All right, coming right back. More of Midday Mobile. Take your calls and texts as well at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Hey, before we wrap it up at 2 and the Feinbaum Show comes on, I got a pair of tickets for the Joy of Life Ball coming up on February 1st, Saturday, February 1st at the Daphne Civic Center. It's a great Mardi Gras ball, a lot of fun, and it benefits St. Jude. And it's a charity we think a whole bunch about right here at FM Talk, and we're happy to be able to give you all tickets. I'm going to be one of the MCs at the event. I know we got a table full of FM Talk 106.5 folks will be out there. Dalton will be in tails as well. You can come by and see Dalton all dressed up. And so it's coming up February 1st. It's in Daphne. I think it starts at 7. I have to go back and check the website. I think it starts at 7. And it's, costume de rigueur and all that good stuff. And we'd love to see you there. I'll give you a chance to win tickets sometime between now and 2 o'clock right here on Midday Mobile. All right, text and calls, phone number, text line, 343-0106, 343-0106. Texter says, what about deployed military? 5 days wouldn't work. You know, it's interesting the politics that get wrapped around early voting. Now, what I was talking about with Todd Stacey, because Secretary of State John Merrill and one time candidate for Senate, remember that? Until he closed the campaign down? Or would he just... he didn't shut it down. He suspended the campaign. He's saying that it cost a lot to the state of Alabama. And he said that's why he would be against. Let me get the quote here from and get the story back up. Yeah, Alabama Secretary of State John Merrill says that expanding early voting is unnecessary given the state's healthy voter participation rate and would add burdensome cost at a state and local level. So that's his argument against early voting. I think people who have it, like people in Florida has it and people like it. I don't know how much. What's the price tag for it and is it worth it? In Alabama, yes, it gets wrapped up in politics as well. You know, any kind of rule change, you're like, what does that affect? Does that give benefit to one party over another? There's a lot of arguments made about that out there. But the argument at least made by the Secretary of State here, at least what he's doing publicly, is arguing that it's costly at the state and local level. I will dig, maybe try to get him on, find out what those numbers are, how much money it would cost to have early voting. Let's see here. Oh, Jason, I don't know. Jason's. I'm going to find out. Jason, I think Todd Stacey does. He's asking what's the sound in the background when we're talking to Todd Stacey. I think he is doing sketches. I think he's doing sketches. What is this? Okay, John, explain that. John says, embarrassed yet? You should be. Mississippi has a lottery. Well, that rhymes, John, but you could have done that in two sentences, or really even one. With why am I embarrassed? Like I don't get that, John. Have you been listening any period of time? First of all, we've been talking about Mississippi's lottery for I don't know, Dalton, how long? A year? 6 months? A year? So it's not breaking news, John. That's kind of old news. And why would it embarrass me one way or another? I don't attach myself. There's very few causes that I attach my embarrassment level to. Yeah, I'm embarrassed that we don't have a lottery, right? Nah. I'm embarrassed that we don't have the right of referendum. Yes, I do. I think the people should be able to vote on it. But it all gets gunched up. Remember what happened last year in this? It got gunched up in the fact that one group thought the money should get... Well, there were actually more than one group. There were probably three groups would say disagreed with where the proceeds would go from a lottery in Alabama. That's what derailed it some. Speaking of which, so coming up on Thursday's show, Robbie McGee from the Porch Band of Creek Indians is going to join me at noon on Thursday, and we're going to get back into an in-depth discussion of the compact that the Porch Creek Indians are offering to the state to give them the right for monopoly for gaming in the state, physical expansion of gambling facilities in North Alabama, and how much money. They talk about $1 billion. Where's the $1 billion to the state of Alabama going to come from? That's going to be noon on Thursday here on this very show, Midday Mobile. All right, 12:58. Somehow I will deal with my embarrassment. And by the way, did I tell you, successful surgery with the rusty X-Acto knife. I'm looking good here on my hand. That's good. Survived that even while doing a show.